Hello and welcome aboard this podcast of RTÉ Radio 1's maritime programme Seascapes, which is presented and produced by Marcus Connaughton. You can email the programme seascapes@rte.ie. Hello and welcome aboard this week's edition of your maritime programme Seascapes. On this week's programme, we hear from David Taylor from Ballyhome Yacht Club on the F-18 World Championships taking place on Belfast Lough this summer. Paul and Aileen Finucan talk to Seascapes about the beautifully produced book on the Old Pier Union Hall, and we've copies of the lavishly produced book in our Seascapes competition. Kieran Devaney has more on the exploits of the Brass Bounders and tales from the Southern Ocean. Seascapes goes aboard the pride of the German Navy, the sail training tall ship, the Gorch Fock. First to that square rigger, the Gorch Fock, built by Blohm & Voss in Hamburg in 1958, and sister ship of the US Coast Guard, the Eagle. We hear from the captain of Gorch Fock, Commander Helge Risch.
As you mentioned before, the ship was built in Hamburg in 58 as a sail training ship for the German Navy, and still we are doing this. So we left Kiel, which is our home port at the Baltic, on the 12th of November and embarked 100 cadets in their first year from the Naval Academy to give them their basic sea training aboard sail training ship Gorch Fock. And usually the training period aboard Gorch Fock is 2 months. And that means, of course, when leaving our home port on the 12th of November and now arriving here in March in Cork, that means that we had a crew change in between. So we changed our crew. We embarked new cadets in Las Palmas on the Canary Islands, and we started a new trip. And so from the Canary Islands, we sailed the ship to Portugal, and now we are here in Ireland. In general, the overall intention, what to do and how and why we are still having that training aboard a sail training ship is, first of all, to give the cadets an impression of traditional seamanship. Because from our point of view, even the influence of the weather and all this is still influencing commanding a ship at sea. Even today, even with modern means, with modern equipment, it is still necessary that you have a basic understanding of what it means to be out at sea and all that sometimes changing, very fast changing weather conditions. That's the first. The second is, of course, and this is becoming more and more important, is that we intend to give them a kind of team training here aboard. And this is because they have to get an impression, the young cadets who intend to become later on officers in our Navy, have to get an impression how important it is that and how you are depending on your personnel. So if you want to become a leader, you always have to build teams. And this is a very authentic way to learn it, because handing the rig on a square rig like this, with no automations, of course, so the entire rig is handled by hand, of course, makes it pretty clear why it is so important to build teams to fulfill the task. Yeah. In general, you are right. However, when planning a voyage like this, of course, I'm always planning with a very low speed of advance. So, because you cannot predict the wind direction and the force of wind. And that means, of course, that you have to take a lot of tacks, or in at least you have to plan with it. So when planning a voyage like this, I'm planning with an average speed, which is, if you compare it with modern ships, of course, very low. It's between 3 and 5 knots. And that means usually, in normal circumstances, you can reach the harbor in time. In fact, well, after leaving Porto, which was our last port of call in Portugal, we were a little bit too fast, because we had perfect weather conditions with Beaufort 7 to 8. So the ship was running up to 14, 15 knots, and we were here two days in advance. So we had to spend our time, and we did it out at sea in distance 50 miles to the south coast of Ireland with sail training with the cadets, so exercising maneuver with them. So you can plan when arriving, however, you don't have to be too ambitious. You have to plan with a very slow speed of advance.
So what got you on the water when you started out as a young cadet? What was the spark that lit the flame?
I always spent my holidays, my vacations at sea. So we had a small sailing boat, and that created when I was a very young boy, of course, an emotion that I later on had the intention and the will, of course, to go at sea. And at the end, of course, in that time we were a conscript navy, so I had to do my service in the navy. I had to do it in the armed forces. I volunteered for the navy, and I personally decided for myself, hey, this is the way I want to do. I saw my captain on the bridge that time, and I told myself, hey, this is something I want to do too, and so I'm very happy to be here now. So we have a permanent crew aboard of 80. It's varying a little bit between 70 and 80. Presently we have 80 permanent crew on board, and that means the 12 officers, including the captain and the ship's medical officer, our doctor, and approximately 15 chief petty officers, and the rest are a crew. So the cook and all what you need to run a ship like this. And we have embarked 99 cadets. So we can embark up to 139 cadets. And that is, the limitation is the bunk space. And the cadets are still sleeping in hammocks. So it's everything is very traditional here. So we can have up to 139 cadets. Presently we have 99 aboard. So that means we have an overall crew of 180 right now.
So over the coming fortnight, at the weekends, you'll be giving the public access to the vessel, so they'll be able to see it, and we'll have details on our webpage as to how people can come here to Cove. But even as you come into the town, you can see the ship's masts.
Yeah, I hope so. I have never been there, but I'm very happy that we are here, because I have been several times to Dublin, but I told myself when planning this voyage, no. You have to go to Cork and to Cove, of course, because I've heard so much wonderful things about the city and the people and the friendship and the hospitality of the people. So I thought myself to bring the ship here. However, you are right. The ship is open for public visitors. So we will stay here for approximately 2 weeks, and every Sunday between 2 and 5 p.m. the ship is open for public visitors, and I'm more than happy to welcome them aboard to show them the ship.
Captain Riesch of the magnificent sail training tall ship and pride of the German Navy, the Gorch Fock. The ship is open to the public this Sunday between 2 and 5 p.m. at the Deepwater Berth in Cove, and is well worth a visit. From a tall ship to an upcoming world championship, following a conversation with sailing journalist Betty Armstrong at the recent ISA Awards, Betty put Seascapes in touch with David Taylor of Ballyhome Yacht Club. They're set to host the F-18 World Championships in early July on Belfast Lough. So we head to our Belfast studios, where David Taylor can tell us more.
We're absolutely delighted. Bill's such an accomplished presence in Ballyhome. His heart is in Belfast Lough, and he has given us the background of let boys get on, do it the way you can do it, and really the seaside of the organisation is totally in place now. Bill's organised a 5-man international jury. And so much has taken place under Bill's guidance. And he has a great team, including our local regional race officer, Robin Gray, who has also taken a big lot of the strain. Without that team, we would struggle to give such a perfect event. Olympian several times over. And the last time he was involved with the Olympics was in the Weymouth Olympics as a backup to the Russian team. And the interesting bit of that was Bill was obliged to wear the Russian uniform for the event, which was, dazzle red and white, and it was quite spectacular.
He's a rock and roller at heart, David, so he wouldn't have had any problems with that. So what about yourself? How did you get involved in sailing, and how did you, obviously you're roped into the organisation of this, which is a huge undertaking.
Yes, I'm lucky that I've been involved with sailing since I was about 27, and I've sailed many international events and quite a CV in terms of boats I've sailed on, events I've sailed in. And about 12 years ago, I got involved with catamarans, and I ran two European events in Ballyhome. And I think this time when the Worlds came round, they asked me to be chairman, and I'm delighted to be here. Because I love what I do, and also I'm glad to say I'm retired. These guys arrive early for the event. They'll probably be here 2 weeks beforehand. For example, the Argentinian guys, their boats have been delivered direct from the manufacturer to Hamilton Shipping in Belfast, who will then leave the containers beside the club. And so the Argentinians with their families and girlfriends will arrive 2 weeks beforehand. They will add a great deal of character to the area over the period of, say, 3 to 4 weeks before the event and obviously during the event.
Well, Marcus, Ballyhome has always been very keen on sailing, dinghy sailing. Over the years, we've done various events. In the last 10 years, we've done two major catamaran events, catamarans being twin-hulled in the case of about 18 foot long. And then within that organisation, we competed at levels over in Europe, and we expressed interest with the Formula 18 committee that we'd like to run the event in Ballyhome. People who have got really long memories and history will remember that Uffa Fox said the best sailing waters in Europe, but he probably also said that about Kiel and the Brittany coast, but it is absolutely fantastic sailing waters. I've sailed in Lake Como, I've sailed in Greece, I've sailed many places around the world, and Belfast Lock has so much to offer. Fairly tide-free, pretty sheltered conditions in most conditions of winter weather. And for a sailing event within a mile of the shore, you can have some cracker sailing. We have Adrian Allen, who has been sailing catamarans for some years, a very accomplished sailor, and he's the force behind the getting the F-18s here. Richard Swanson, also another very keen local sailor from a family that's long connections with Ballyhome Yacht Club. And so we're delighted to have them sailing in this event, plus also about another 18 sailors from across Ireland. Without that solid support from the North Down Borough Council in particular, in the locality, and also from Northern Isles Tourist Board to spread the word far afield, this event would fall flat. But we are delighted to say that North Down have not only helped us last year, but this year they're giving us the putting green, for example. They're one of the tennis courts, because we need so much space for these boats and for their road trailers, and the whole clientele we're attracting will take up a lot of space, and North Down have leant over backwards to help us.
David, how many countries are participating? And you might describe these multi-hulls for us, because they're pretty fast on the water.
They're pretty fast on the water. Over the years, there have been many, many designs of catamarans. The F-18 is a formula class, which is simply a box rule, a hypothetical box, 18 foot long, so wide, weighs 150 kilos, and you can design within that box. And the background to that is, how many catamarans can you fit into a 40-foot container? And 18 foot is the ideal length to get about 14 catamarans into one container. So they are worldwide, and many different designs, probably about 12 different designs, but they all race boat for boat against each other. In terms of countries representing, quite unusually, last time there were actually it was actually an entry from Kenya. We don't expect him to arrive, but probably about 25 countries, including Australia, probably 14 boats sitting in a container already in Australia, Argentina, who are very strong, USA, and the bulk of the boats will come from France, Germany, Holland, and also from the UK.
So if people would like to find out more, David, they can visit, obviously there's a dedicated website, but there's also a Facebook page.
There is indeed. Our website, which has got a lot of information on it, including also a short video produced by one of our own members, Mark Johnson, which is quite amusing and very informative for about Bangor and Northern Ireland. The website is www.2014.f18worlds.com. ballyhomesource.com.
David Taylor in the F18 World Championships, destined for Ballyhome Yacht Club this summer. You can read and see more on the Seascapes webpage, www.rte.ie/radio1/Seascapes. Handel's Messiah will be performed by the occasional singers, a specially assembled group with soloist, organist and trumpet under the direction of Robin Moore. The recital begins at 7:30 on Saturday next, the 29th of March, in the National Maritime Museum of Ireland in Hay Terrace in Dunlera. Tickets are €15 and they are available from administration@mariner.ie, or you can call 01-2143-964. That's 01-2143-964. Doors are open at 6:45 p.m. and those details will be on our webpage. Next, here on Your Maritime programme, to a lavishly produced book on the Old Pier Union Hall, published by Red Barn Publishing and written and edited by Paul and Aileen Finucane. We met up a few weeks ago to hear how the project came about. Through the work of a variety of artists and inspired by two Australian artists, Harry Sherwin from Murray Bridge, South Australia, and the late Murray Edwards, Paul and Aileen told Seascapes how it all took shape.
Yeah, Glendore Harbour and all parts of it, fantastic. We've been lucky enough to have a house there since the late 80s, stumbled upon the place at a time when we were living in the UK, and we've come and gone since then, but Union Hall we've regarded as home for 30-odd years now. It's quite a special place. First of all, it's on a cul-de-sac, so it is the kind of place that some people don't ever get to unless you really make it your business to get there. I mean, you pass through other places like Ballydehob and people even pass through Skull, but Union Hall being on a cul-de-sac, people often miss out on, and I think that's a shame. But absolutely spectacular, you're right. And the landmarks that are there since the mid-19th century, like the old pier in Union Hall, and then the bridge that connects the Glendore side of the harbour with the Union Hall side of the harbour. And these are the things that we've tried to feature in the book. When you see photographs of the harbour around about the turn of the 19th century, that's the late 1800s, early 1900s, particularly from the Lawrence collection that's housed up in the National Library, and you see the amount of activity that was there at the old pier at that time, lots of boats in the harbour, a coopering industry. They used to salt herrings there, and then the herrings were exported often to Russia, funnily enough, to feed the army, and a huge industry. People used to come across from Scotland, I understand, in the late 18th century, early 19th century for the herring season. Yeah.
Well, we've been very lucky, I suppose, because of the downturn in the economy. People who are very busy up to recently were available to us. The original painting was painted as a gift to us by an Australian friend who stayed in the cottage for 3 weeks with his partner and his partner's mum. And he gave us the first painting as a gift, as thanks for staying there. And then subsequently another Australian artist came and stayed in the cottage with his daughter. He has since died. And he did exactly the same scene for us. And then we just started asking local artists first who were accessible. And then we decided, well, I actually emailed Martin Gale thinking he'd just ignore me. But he's a lovely, lovely man. And he was very keen to come and do the painting, which he did. And then we contacted Robert Bella, who was just as happy to come and do the painting. So we've been extremely lucky.
And Marcus, I think one of the unusual things about the book is the range of artists that are featured in it. Some professional artists who'd be very well known nationally and internationally. I mean, people as well like Una Seely, like Elizabeth Cope, Arthur Madison, Michael McCarthy and so on, together with artists who really wouldn't be known that terribly well outside the West Cork area, but are fantastic artists for all of that. And indeed, some people who would refer to themselves as hobby artists. So it book manages into 25 artists featured to capture the full range of professional, local and indeed hobby artists. certainly the artists who came, and all 25 of them came and stayed with us. And just on an aside, that was actually one of the most amazing things about producing the book, was getting to meet these people. But time and again, people commented about the light. I think certainly the light in West Cork, but the particular light that they seemed to think existed in Glendore Harbour. And that's true perhaps mostly from the people from overseas. The Australians in particular were gobsmacked by the lighting.
There is almost a sense that you've got a gateway to somewhere, isn't there? When you look from that vantage point in Union Hall,
Union Hall is north facing, doesn't get the direct light. Glendore is south facing and therefore gets, I'm sure that's the reason why back in the 19th century, when people were coming looking for holiday destinations, they came to places like Glendore because of the light in summer. But I think what you've said is absolutely right, that looking across at the light gives people inspiration, and the reference to Australia, I think, is something that we've heard from a few people. Paul Gorham says it all, yes, and that the name is obviously, for those who haven't got fluency in Irish, it's the blue hole or the dark hole, and there is a deep area just north of the existing bridge that connects Glendore and Union Hall, and that's where the name came from. Just to say that Brian Traw is perhaps a name that Union Hall doesn't exactly celebrate. The literal translation is the Foul Strand, and that's nothing to do with the delightful area, but many, many decades ago, some people think it's probably 17th century, there was a sea battle where a lot of warriors were killed at sea, mostly, I understand, from the O'Donovan clan, and the bodies were deposited on the shore around Union Hall, and it was the decaying bodies that gave the name the Foul Strand or Brian Traw. The name Union Hall comes from 1801, when the landlord of the time, Colonel Speight, decided he would celebrate the act of union between Great Britain and Ireland by calling his existing big house, the Hall, Union Hall, to celebrate the act of union. I don't know if too many people in the locality would have felt that was a great reason for celebration, but the important people did. All proceeds from the sale of the books are going to charity. The charities that have been identified to date is to pay off the existing debt in the community hall in Union Hall, and also restoration of the church in Glendore. But I think other charities will come along in time, and all proceeds, not just the profits, but the proceeds from the sales of the book will go to charity.
Anybody who understands fishing and maritime communities immediately understands the bond that is there, but it certainly was a great tribute to the people of Union Hall in the manner in which they dealt with that disaster, wasn't it?
Yes, I mean, and that was received a lot of national attention, as you know, Marcus. It doesn't surprise us. I mean, I personally have lived, come from West Limerick, from a very fine town, and we've together lived in many places. We've lived in the Middle East, in Yemen. We've lived in Cardiff, in Wales. We've lived in a number of places in Australia, and we've lived in a number of places in Ireland. There is no place that I've come across that comes even close to Union Hall. And what makes Union Hall special is its absolutely extraordinary community. Before the Tebanon disaster and subsequently, we've seen this community spirit time and time again. I think it is simply a place apart.
The voices of Paul and Aileen Finucane. We have a few copies of the Old Pier Union Hall in our Seascapes competition. We want you to answer this question. In which harbour would you find Union Hall? Answers on a postcard to Seascapes RTE Radio 1 Father Matthew Street in Cork, or by email seascapes@rte.ie. The Old Pier Union Hall is available from discerning bookshops around the country and is available in Union Hall. You can see and read more detail on the Seascapes webpage or visit www.madeinwestcork.ie. Now on Seascapes to the Northwest, an intrepid journalist, Kieran Devaney, who revisits the pages of David Bone's epic The Brass Bounder, presented to each seafaring captain departing the village that has a distinguished maritime tradition of sea captains, Ross's Point.
At midnight, the wind was howling slaughter, and stout old Jock, dismayed at last at the furious sea upreared against him, was at last forced to lay her to. In a piping squall of snow and sleet, we set to haul up the foresail. Intent on the work, we had no eye to the weather, and only the captain and steersman saw the sweep of a monster sea that bore down on us, white-crested and curling. "Stand by!" yelled the old man. It was dark, with a black squall making up to windward, as we laid out on the yard and grappled with the wet and heavy canvas. Once we had the sail up, but the wind that burst on us tore it from our stiffened fingers. A lull came. We clutched and pounded at the board-like cloths, dug with hooked fingers to make a crease for handholds, and at last turned the sail to the yard, though lubberly and ill-furled. One by one, as our bit was secured, we straggled down the rigging. Some of the hands were aft on the lee side of the poop, staring into darkness astern, where Duncan was. Munro was crying hysterically, and by his side a man muttered, "Dead? My God, I hope he's dead out there." The old man crossed over from the weather side and, addressing the men, said, "The mate tells me you wanted to get to the boat where McInnes went. I'm pleased that you've that much guts in you. But I could risk no boat's crew in a sea like this. Besides, I'm more ally certain that McInnes was dead before he took to the water, eh, mister?"
"Aye, dead,"
said the mate.
"I saw him strike the topgallant rail, and no man could live after a blow like that. Dead, sure."
So Duncan took his discharge, and a few days later, in clearing weather, his few belongings were sold at the mast. It was known that he wasn't married, but Welsh John, who knew him best, said he had spoken of his mother in Skye. And the old man kept a few letters and his watch that he might have something besides his money to send to Duncan's relatives. As if Duncan had paid our toll for rounding the storm-scarred cape. The weather cleared and winds set fair to us after that last dread night of storm. Under a press of canvas, we put our head to the Norrod and soon left the Horn and the Roaring Forties astern.
David Bowen's harrowing account of rounding Cape Horn on a passage to Sligo, first published in his book The Brass Bounder in 1910. But I wanted to know more about his master, stout old Jock. I discovered he was Captain William Leask from the aptly named townland of Ireland in Orkney. In November 1872, as mate of the City of Florence, he was making an even longer voyage from London around the Cape of Good Hope to Melbourne, when the lookout spotted a derelict brigantine off the coast of Portugal. William Leask was ordered by his captain to lead a boarding party. What he found will rewrite the story of one of the greatest maritime mysteries of the 19th century, the mystery of the Mary Celeste. But that's a story for another day.
Special thanks from Kieran to Trevor Sweeney. Don't miss Kieran Devaney next week here on Seascapes with a special piece of maritime history. Next week here on Seascapes, we talk to film cameraman, photographer and sailor aboard the Clipper Ventures Round the World Yacht Race, Brian Carlin, after the recent leg from Singapore to Qingdao. Dublin Port hosts a training workshop for over 30 overseas port managers from countries such as Ghana, Indonesia, Nigeria and the Philippines. A forthcoming lecture on the Coast Guard Service by Joe Ryan. And Kieran Devaney will reveal the mystery discovery by the first mate from Stromness aboard the City of Florence. All that and much more here on Seascapes. Until next Friday night, tight lines and fair sailing.